Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Nearly 10 months after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, another legal challenge is putting abortion care in limbo. Although last year's Dobbs decision removed a federal right to abortion, it returned that power to individual states. Since then, the country has been essentially divided in half when it comes to states that allow abortions and others which ban it entirely or have put restrictions in place. And it is still very much evolving. But this latest legal fight involves medication abortions, which account for more than half of all abortions in the country. At the center is a pill called mifepristone, which was first approved by the FDA to terminate a pregnancy more than 20 years ago, but with restrictions. This year, though, the FDA expanded its approval so that retail pharmacies could provide this abortion pill with a prescription, and that widened access. Now, conflicting rulings in Texas and Washington State are challenging the FDA's decision, and that can have far-reaching consequences to abortion care, including here in California. Michelle Goodwin is a Chancellor's Professor of Law at UC Irvine and joins us with a legal perspective to the rulings. We're also joined by Candelaria Vargas with Planned Parenthood Marmonte, which encompasses the California coast to the Sierra Nevada, about how this impacts reproductive care in the state. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Candelaria, I want to start with you. I mean, although reproductive rights and abortion, it's just at the forefront of a political and a national debate, but really the root of what we're talking about is deeply personal. And often you don't really know the specifics of what terminating a pregnancy entails until you're confronted with it.
Right.
So since we're going to be talking in detail about medications that are involved, I want to start with mifepristone. What does this drug accomplish?
Mifepristone is used by blocking the body's progesterone, which is the hormone that allows for growth of a fetus. And what it does is it blocks that hormone progesterone to stop the growth. And that's the first pill, which is the standard. The medical standard is mifepristone first and then misoprostol second, which causes cramping and bleeding and emptying of the uterus. Mm.
And these drugs can also be used at times if someone suffers a miscarriage as well.
Correct. Misoprostol is the medication that is used for miscarriage care and management.
Yeah. And this two-pill abortion series, mifepristone in combination with misoprostol or misoprostol, is essentially the most common regimen in the United States.
That is correct. It is what our doctors call the gold standard, and what in providing care to make sure that our patients receive the best care.
So now that we have an understanding of how medical abortions are conducted in the United States, Professor Goodwin, I mean, you focus on law that surrounds reproductive rights. So let's dive into these dueling lawsuits. The first comes out of Texas, and it would block FDA's approval of mifepristone at retail pharmacies. What is the argument here?
Well, the argument that's been put forth by the petitioners was that the FDA rushed this drug to the marketplace. And in doing so, there was not a thorough review. And then as well, that this is a drug that is dangerous, that leads to health risks, that leads to morbidities and mortalities. Those were the underlying arguments put forward by the petitioners. Now, it's worth noting that the petitioners brought this claim 23 years after the FDA had approved the drug for the marketplace. And then if we were to address the factual matters here, it turns out that in 2000, by that point, the FDA had spent more than 4 years of review, 54 months of mifepristone. And to put that in context with other drugs that the FDA approved in that same period, on average, they were at a 15-month review. So factually, there is a very serious inaccuracy that's worth being corrected. And the second thing in terms of the legal claim that was brought connected with this is that it's a drug that is unsafe and that being in the marketplace, it poses serious risks of harm to the people that use it. Well, this is also a very key question and contention because even before the Food and Drug Administration approved the drug for the marketplace, it had been used for decades in Europe. And in the 23 years since, there's a lot of data that has been gathered. That data tells us the following, that there are lower morbidities associated with this drug than with Tylenol, penicillin, many of the common drugs that people have in their medicine cabinets and use frequently, or within a context of sex and reproduction, safer than Viagra. So those were the contentions. And out of Texas, there is a drug, Judge Kaczmarek, who asked the petitioners how exactly he should rule. And they said that this is a drug that should be removed from the marketplace. And that was basically the order that he gave, although he did provide a 7-day window for there to be any challenge by the FDA. And in fact, they did appeal, and the case is now going before the Fifth Circuit.
Okay, so you're laying out, you know, a history of research. You're also mentioned that there are some inaccuracies in this filing. Is it common for a judge to rule in this way, given everything you just laid out?
Well, this is highly unusual. It is, in that the judge asked the petitioners whether this is something that had ever been done before, and they said no, and they are right. There's never been a time in which a federal judge has ordered the FDA to remove a drug that it has approved for the marketplace. There are many reasons for that, including the fact that there are legions of scientists and doctors who work with the Food and Drug Administration in order to bring about a drug to the marketplace for approval. And that's not counting the research that's done by the actual manufacturer. Now, it's not the case that there aren't drugs that we find, in fact, to be harmful once they are in the marketplace. But here the question is whether the 23 years of this drug being in the marketplace has been able to satisfy those questions. And quite strongly, it has. The 23 years of research in the United States, which tells us that this is a drug that is incredibly safe. And even beyond that, we have the United States Supreme Court in 2016 in a case called Whole Woman's Health v. Hellerstedt, note that a woman is 14 times more likely to die by carrying a pregnancy to term than even by having an abortion. So with
Oh, I think we lost Professor Goodwin. We're going to get her back. But Candelaria, you're here with us right now.
Yes.
You know, we're talking about, given that appeals are taking place, there are legal challenges. So there's a gray area,
yeah.
Right? And this can impact California as well. So how
That's
does
right.
this gray area impact Planned Parenthood's work and services in California?
Yeah, that's a great question. I first and foremost wanted to take the opportunity to let folks know that abortions are legal here in the state of California, and that folks can access abortion care in California. The reason why I have to mention that is because what it does is it causes a lot of confusion to our patients who will hesitate and even wonder if it's accessible. And so when we have these gray areas, it really puts folks into these positions of not unsure, right? They're not sure what's available to them, so they may not ask for the care that they need. And so it also, what it does is it sometimes for some providers who provide abortion care, puts them in a gray space as well, in a legal limbo some folks want to avoid. Of course, right? They have their licenses. They spend a lot of time studying to provide this care, and they are unsure on whether or not they can provide the care, on where they stand, and a lot of times, too, they wonder what the timeline is for if something is to become banned and they're no longer able to use it. What are the repercussions on themselves and the care that they provide for their patients? And so the gray area is, and it could be, too, that it is purposeful, right? We had a lot of confusion, too, from folks and once the Dobbs decision was handed down, and whether or not California or Nevada provided, we covered Nevada as well, provided or had available abortion care. And so it could be that that's part of the strategy in making it confusing for folks to wonder what's available to me. And so I think that it's dangerous because people are not able to get effective care when they need it. Because time is of the essence when it comes to this type of care or any type of healthcare, right? And so that's what I'll share about that.
Yeah. Professor Goodwin, we have you back on. You know, we were talking about the gray area that this creates. And a part of that gray area is another ruling. And this one was from a judge in Washington state. And this judge ruled in favor of a coalition of Democratic attorneys general to essentially allow these states to continue making mifepristone available. What does this lawsuit and ruling accomplish?
Well, what those states' attorneys general hoped to do was to expand the access and reach of mifepristone within their states so that even though the Food and Drug Administration had approved this drug after lengthy study and review and found it to be a very safe medication for the purpose of terminating pregnancy, and as well, it's approved for other types of medical indications, they wanted it to be more broadly available. There are pro-choice or reproductive rights justice groups that have said that the FDA has been rather conservative in making this drug more accessible. And so their lawsuit was about greater accessibility. And this ruling that came out of Washington was one that didn't necessarily grant the state's attorneys general all that they wanted, but it certainly was a far cry different than the ruling that came out of Amarillo, Texas. And what this does then is key up a division. And usually when there are divides amongst the federal jurisdictions of our courts, that tees up litigation for the United States Supreme Court. The Supreme Court can always decide whether it will or will not take up a case, but many legal scholars and analysts see this as potentially leading to another Supreme Court case. And there's concern about whether this Supreme Court, as it's currently comprised, would be one that it's unclear exactly how the court would rule. But given the decision in Dobbs, there are many that fear that with a court as conservative as this one is with regard to reproductive rights and freedom, that it could be that mifepristone may be removed from the marketplace or that there may be other restrictions placed on this drug. And it's worth noting how this case tees up vis-a-vis Dobbs, in that there was a concurring opinion from Justice Kavanaugh in Dobbs. And what Justice Kavanaugh suggested, and the majority did, was that these are matters that should be decided by states, by the political process. And what one sees coming out of the Amarillo, Texas decision by Judge Kaczmarek is one that flies in the face of Dobbs, in that you have one federal judge making a decision that will affect all states, including those states where abortion is legal and accessible.
Then why, Professor, why do you think this lawsuit or these lawsuits are focusing solely on mifepristone when this is part of a two-pill regimen, when the standard regimen also includes a second drug, misoprostol?
Well, to understand the anti-abortion movement and ARC, it's been one that has been a chip away type of framework and playbook that's been used. One can note, for example, that Dobbs itself comes only after decades of anti-abortion groups winning small victories at state legislatures bit by bit. Between 2010, and here's an example, between 2010 and 2013, there were more anti-abortion, anti-contraception laws that were proposed and enacted than the 30 years prior combined. And so since 2010, what we see is a very aggressive chipping away bit by bit, but it wasn't one blow. And what I mean by that is that Dobbs is a 2022 decision. It's not a case that comes out of 2011 or 2012 or 2013, even though the landscape for that was really being cultivated and curated by anti-abortion groups. It's also not to say that this is the last blow that will go towards abortion rights and freedom in this country. It's not clear that this is where anti-abortion groups will end. In fact, I would argue that this is not it. This is only one piece of an arsenal that has been waged within this particular space. Mm-hmm.
Gondolatia, when it comes to providing care, what does removing mifepristone from the equation essentially look like for patients?
What it looks like is we still offer medication abortion using a misoprostol-only medication abortion. We always center patient care, so we give them the option of either the misoprostol-only option or having an in-clinic option as well. What it does is it causes more unnecessary pain and cramping. There's less cramping and pain if mifepristone is used in advance. And overall, it's causing more discomfort and harm to our patients. Mm.
Finally, Gondolatia, with these competing rulings, I mean, what is just like the take-home information for Californians who can get pregnant?
I have three kids myself, so it's something that's very front of mind. And what I'll share is that, just like I shared earlier, abortion care is available here in California. I'll also want to share that please vote. Even though we're in the state of California and that's accessible to us, we do have our local council members here in the state. And I will share in Visalia, we've had some difficulties opening up a new and expanding our health centers.
In
the Central Valley, because we cover Central Valley as well. So the city council has a lot of power in deciding what buildings get put where, and they can and have prohibited our access. And so I just want to end with that. Please vote. Please pay attention as to who you're voting for and what their history is. And of course, if folks are interested right now in getting involved, we have a variety of activities taking place over the weekend.
Gondolatia and Michelle, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Professor Michelle Goodwin is a Chancellor's Professor of Law at UC Irvine. Gondolatia Vargas is with Planned Parenthood Marmonte, which encompasses Central Coast, including the Central Valley and the Sierra Nevada into the state of Nevada, discussing California's impact following federal rulings over an abortion pill. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.